You couldn't hear me because I had my microphone off. Hi, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thank you for listening this November 7th, 2017. We have a very interesting show for you. It's all about the Gettysburg Address, which is, I'm not sure, I should have looked it up, the exact date, but it's upcoming. And there was a book written by ASCD, published by ASCD, authored by Harvey Alvey and Pam Robbins. And it's called Learning from Lincoln. I got it right here. Learning from Lincoln, Leadership Practices for School Success. How about that? And we're going to talk about that and the importance of the Gettysburg Address and how to communicate and what we can learn from Lincoln. You have to pardon me for a second. I'm having an allergy attack. Let me turn off my mic for 1 second. There we go. Okay, sorry about that. Finally, after all this time, they decided it was allergies that's making me crazy here. All right, so we've got Harvey and Pam here. I apologize for that. We're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org and tweet it out over at EduTalkRadio. And without further ado and me coughing, let me bring on Pam and Harvey. And there you are. Are you there, Pam?
Yes. Hi, Larry.
Hi,
hey,
Pam.
Good morning,
how
Larry.
Are you? I didn't say hello to you yet, Harvey. He just jumped right in there, Pam. I don't know. Right? He's like that. Hi, Harv. How you doing? Good to have you back.
Hey, Larry. Great. And please try not to give us any of your allergies over the phone, okay?
Oh, it's unbelievable. I hope you don't get them. It's just been causing this incredible coughing, and I won't go into the other lurid details. And finally, I think I got something. It's actually better today, if you can believe this. So, and you can hear it in how nasal I am these days. But I am nasal. All right, we're going to talk about, and I want to get right into this. This is really cool. Your book, again, from ASCD, is Learning from Lincoln, Leadership Practices for School Success. And you have we've done a show on this before, and you have you guys have 10 things that are important. But today we're going to focus on the Gettysburg Address and what we can all kind of learn from that, how it fits into the world today, how it fits into social studies curriculum, et cetera, et cetera. And I know that what is the date, Harvey? What's the date of the Gettysburg Address?
November 19th, 1863.
Okay, so we're just. Okay, so we're just a yep. few days off, okay? And it's important, and I'm actually glad we're doing this ahead of the Gettysburg Address so that perhaps teachers listening can jump right on this for the November 19th date. By the way, the Gettysburg Battle was in July, all right? So it took
Correct.
A while. You didn't come there, yeah, right after the battle happened. It took a while, thoughtfulness, et cetera. And I know both of you. Asked if not together, but one of you is going to read the actual Gettysburg Address, and we're going to take the time to do that. Okay, who wants to do that? Who's going to be the narrator? Who's going to do Lincoln? Is it Daniel Day Alvey or Daniel Day Robbins?
Well, we're gonna actually do it together, Larry. But since Pam was actually there at Gettysburg, she's going to start off.
How was that, Pam?
She flatters me.
I bet it smelled terrible at Gettysburg that day.
Absolutely.
You weren't talking about 1863. You know, that's one of the things I have to say. We always watch these battles on TV, this old stuff, but those bodies laid there for a while, and the place must have the stench must have been absolutely unbelievable. The stench of war. They talk about that. There really is one. You know? God, it's just disgusting.
Yeah, that's all right? Actually... That's actually true, Larry. And in fact, when Lincoln arrived at Gettysburg, even in November, there was when he arrived at the train station, there were quite a few corpses that were in wooden crates there at the train station, and they were still kind of figuring out how they were going to work things out at the National Cemetery. But let's. Let's begin. Go ahead, Pam.
The Gettysburg Address, ladies and gentlemen. Pam Robbins, one of our author guests today. Pam, you're on. Daniel Day Robbins.
Thanks, Larry. All right. So 87 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived and so dedicated can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that that nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this.
But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
That's it, huh? That's it. 2 minutes?
272 words and a little over 2 minutes to deliver at that dedication ceremony for a National Soldiers Cemetery. Pretty incredible. For a man who, as Harvey and I have often marveled, only had a year of formal schooling.
It sounds stupid now that I thought of saying it. It's beyond words. You know,
really, you know, Larry.
Yeah.
I did catch, Larry, when I shared the sentence, the world a little note no longer remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. I did catch your response to that, your voice.
Yeah.
And it is an amazing speech, and one of the reasons is because of that sentence. It never dawned on Lincoln, because of his humility, that the world might actually remember the speech as much as the battlefield.
I think they remember, you know, I think everybody would agree, they remember the speech more so than the battle. Okay, I think if he hadn't given the speech, the battle would have always been important historically, but not part of the American culture like it is. That's, I think, the difference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a really excellent point. And as we go through it this morning, and again, we appreciate the opportunity to do this, Larry, with
my pleasure. We're
four
do
teachers
more.
And principals, especially right before, you know, 2 weeks before the anniversary of the speech.
Yeah.
There is so many aspects of it that are great for classrooms, are great for leadership, humility of the speech, the empathy, Lincoln's being there, the presence, just the fact that he was there. He was not the main speaker of the day. Of course, that was Edward Everett, but Lincoln's presence at Gettysburg was the powerful message, and he was only supposed to give a few brief remarks, and he did exactly what he was supposed
to. He did.
And his presence there is really the compelling moment that he wanted to experience with the crowd. And again, he never imagined that his words might live on, you know, for eternity.
Yeah, so much for Edward Everett, right? Right. Right. Actually, I didn't know that Lincoln was the secondary speaker. He was the president of the United States. It's
right.
Interesting.
The task for Lincoln was literally the phrase from the gentleman who invited him was to give a few appropriate remarks. And that was his goal. And Edward Everett was the greatest orator of the day. And his two-hour speech was the big event of the day. But Everett wrote a little note to Lincoln a few days afterwards and said to Lincoln in the note, and Lincoln prized this tremendously because he had great respect for Edward. He said, "You said more in 2 minutes than I said in 2 hours."
Yeah, well, just goes to show you, and boy, ain't that the truth when you really think about it. What lessons can we learn from that today? Are there any politicians? No, I can't think of any who might learn something. I'm at a complete loss here. I can't think of any. Okay, I'm sorry about that. You know, all this is good. We're going to talk about the actual historical events some more. But when you look at that speech, and you guys do this for a living, relate that to school leadership, which is what your book is about. Again, learning from Lincoln. All right, I'm going to get the right title here. Learning from Lincoln, Leadership Practices for School Success. Talk about the speech at the Gettysburg Address in particular. And I guess to leadership anywhere, but we talk here on school leadership. Put the two together, Harvey or Pam, whoever wants to do it. Can you? You guys can't see
Pam,
each other.
You're
in different parts of the country. Go ahead, Pam.
Okay. Thanks, Harvey, and thanks, Larry.
Pam, I'm going to give Harvey the easy question. He asked for the easy questions, and he said to give Pam the hard ones.
That figures. That figures. Well, yeah. You know, he's older, so, you know, we have to defer to the ages.
Much older. Right.
So one of the things that struck me as I revisited that speech in preparation for our talk today is the fact that Lincoln had this amazing ability to use ordinary language to communicate the somber, hallowed setting. And we know that school leaders have a real gift if they're able to capture the emotion of a moment, because we know from brain research that emotion drives attention and attention drives learning. And in those few words, I think Lincoln portrayed a mission statement of equality and union, a vision of a new birth of freedom and the government of the people, by the people, for the people. And we know that one of the most fundamental tasks of school leaders and classroom leaders is the capacity to develop and communicate collaboratively that shared vision and mission. We also know that humility makes us more approachable. And, you know, Lincoln's words about the word world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but they can never forget what they did here. I think that humility makes us approachable. And one of the things that the leadership literature often talks about is humility and respect as two profound manifestations or leadership qualities. We also know that empathy, and when people are down, the propensity to give them hope lifts them up and helps them move forward on this path charted by the vision and mission. And so those are just a few things that I think about as I try to connect the Gettysburg Address to some of the challenges of school leaders, both at the building level and classroom level today.
That was interesting. You kept using the that word keeps popping up as we're talking, is humility. Okay, it's really an important thing, because humility, not putting all the onus on yourself, makes people feel comfortable. You're not separating yourself from them. You know, that's a simple Harvard. Do you have anything? I'm sorry. Go ahead, Pam. I wanted to say something.
Oh, I was going to say we don't even see the word I in the speech. And this morning I revisited and I counted 10 we's. We're in this together to move forward to complete the unfinished business, the unfinished work.
Wow. How are we doing on that? Harvey, go ahead. Your thoughts.
Yeah, Larry. Yeah, just to kind of follow up a little bit. As Pam said from the book The Extraordinary Leader by Zenger and Folkman, the quote, humility will make you approachable, it's a great point about leadership, because when we see leadership fail over the years, it's very often because folks are afraid to tell the leader what's really going on. you know, and that's really one of the risks of leadership, is that you're kind of in a bubble. The only other things I would add in terms of the whole leadership point is that it's really important for principals. When I was a school principal, it was very important to tell the story of the school. And the Gettysburg Address is a story. It's a three-part story. You know, the beginning of the story, you know, it's a 47 years ago, the story of the origin of the country. And then the second part of the story is telling about the present. Now we are engaged in a great civil war. And then, of course, the future. When you know, Lincoln talks about the unfinished work and where we have to go.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's another important quality of school leaders. And as Pam was saying, you know, the importance of mission and vision and the ability to communicate it succinctly is really critical.
Yeah, it is. It's actually interesting. You got to know where you're starting off from to know where you're going to go. All right, it's that simple. Okay, it's a map basically, and you're right. This small speech encompasses a huge history. All right, and I have to ask, and this is interesting because school leaders have to engage the community. School leaders have to engage legislators. School leaders have to engage students, teachers, etc. All right, and you know, what was when Lincoln gave his speech? And let's remember, he was Lincoln, and he was president. All right, that's important. All right, it was a different presidency from what we know today, quieter, so to speak. All presidencies were, but when the audience heard the speech, what do you know about that? And I'll throw it to Pam, and you can throw it to Harvey if you want. Well, how did the audience react? Because that's really what we're dealing with here, is a leadership and speech quality that allows the audience to react and absorb. Okay, that's what we want to get. Yeah, go ahead, Pam.
Absolutely. We're told that Lincoln walked the battlefield before the speech. And I think he soaked in the somber, hallowed ground, and that gave him... in addition to, of course, the careful thinking that he had done about the words prior to the address, the ability to really capture the moment and connect with people. I guess the formal words in leadership literature would be situational awareness. But one of the quotes that Harvey shared with me to illustrate this was from a book called The Gettysburg Gospel, published in 2006 by Gaber Borit. And he's talking about the profound moment when the crowd reacted to Lincoln's words, "The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here." And the author writes, "As Lincoln spoke, a captain in the crowd with an empty sleeve buried his face in his good arm, shaking and sobbing aloud. Then he raised his eyes high and exclaimed in a low, solemn voice, 'God Almighty bless Abraham Lincoln.' A reporter, noting the faces around the soldier, thought that people responded silently with 'Amen.' And all the while, the crowd applauded Lincoln again." That, to me, captured the essence of being there in the crowd and responding to Lincoln's words. Harvey?
Yeah, you know, a couple of things I'd like to add.
Sure.
You know, we have to remember again, Larry, that the speech was only 2.5 minutes. And
right.
Clearly it had a profound effect on some people that were there. But there were also a lot of people that missed what took place because it was so quick. And, you know, the story of the photographer who was just setting up and didn't get a picture. And so I think what's important to keep in mind is, you know, they say Lincoln, if he had lived today, not to necessarily make comparison with another president, but that he would have been great on Twitter because he knew the power of words. So the effect of the speech is also the post-speech. So what were the newspapers saying? And, of course, you know, many more people were going to read the speech in the newspapers than were actually there. So Lincoln was aware of that. So when we talk about his audience, he has the immediate audience and then the audience that read it in the newspapers. And, of course, the pro-Republican papers, Lincoln's party, were very supportive of the speech. Some of the pro-Democratic papers were not happy with the speech. In fact, they felt the phrase, you know, "new birth of freedom," maybe was going too far, because clearly he was talking about a world beyond slavery, America beyond slavery. So Lincoln really knew the effect of newspapers. This is a critical point. And I think, again, getting back to school leaders, the importance of language, what they say on a website, what they say to an audience of parents that come for parent night, what they say to students, graduation speech.
Yeah.
This was a really critical. So I think, and as we certainly see today, the power of that speech today, as Pam and I, you know, spoke before we're doing the show with you today, Larry. You know, every time I read the speech, even though I've read it hundreds of times, I learn something new. And so that was part of the power. Lincoln knew, as one of the great Lincoln historians, Michael Burlingame has said, words matter. And Lincoln knew that.
Yeah, and what you said about, you know, with Twitter, with President Trump, people make fun and all that sort of thing. But I'm not a Trump supporter at all. But I give the guy credit, okay, because he stays in touch. And I don't agree with what he's saying, all right? But he stays in touch. He jumped on something that was there that no one else was using in politics. And he really made it matter to his candidacy. And there's something to be said for that. Okay. I do disagree with him on almost everything, but we can learn a lesson from that, the power of words and also the power of being concise. And, you know, said something that struck me as really interesting. Lincoln knew that. And of course, in those days, most people could not hear the speech. In fact, probably some of the people in the audience couldn't hear the speech because there was no microphone.
You're right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
All right? But everybody was going to read the speech, all right, when they saw it. And I wonder if Abraham Lincoln said, you know, everybody's going to read this speech. Let me make it short and concise and get my points across quickly. More people will read it, and I can get the message across quickly, easier, and very, very concise. Did you ever read anything about that? Did he keep it short? Not because he was asked to, but because he knew that would be the way to get the word out?
Let me just say, you know, when we look at, Pam mentioned earlier, you know, that Lincoln had 1 year of formal schooling. One of the keys to understanding Lincoln.
Yeah, but he was a smart guy.
Right.
Smart guy.
The point is that early in his career, he gave pretty long speeches. And he learned throughout his life to give better speeches, to give shorter speeches. And you think about, you know, some of his major speeches from the 1850s and on, you know, for example, the House Divided speech. You know, when we remember that phrase, the House Divided, from the first inaugural address when he talks about the better angels of our nature. And then Gettysburg, and you know, 67 years. And the second inaugural address when we think about with malice towards none. So yes, Larry, he was well aware of that, and so words again really, really mattered, and he knew that he was also a genius in understanding the power of newspapers, and he worked very hard even after the Lincoln-Douglas debates. He before they were published, he went through them again as an editor to make sure they said what he wanted them to say. So yes, he was well aware of that. He was very careful in what he had to say, and his major addresses towards the end of his life were all quite short.
It's really amazing. And I just have to say one thing, Pam. The other thing that struck me, excuse me, Pam, I'll let you go back on in a second. The other thing that struck me is we know how iconic the speech is here in 2017. All right, 200 years later, whatever it is, 180 years later. All right, but it's amazing that there were people, like you said, the Democrats in those days, okay, who didn't like the speech. Yeah, the political guy, he made the speech. We don't like it. We're going to pull it apart just like we do on MSNBC and Fox News. Okay, we pull apart every word. All right, so it's astounding to me that something that's so iconic in American history, some people back then, politics, they didn't like the speech. It's just that simple. Okay, but the words lived on, and I think it's just incredible. Pam, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just wanted to make that silly point.
No, absolutely. It wasn't silly at all. In fact, it reminded me of something else, and I'll just say real quickly that Lincoln, from the time he was a child, was fascinated with words. In fact, in one account, he talks about whenever he hears a word that he doesn't understand, he, you know, works hard to, Harvey probably has the words that he said, to understand it, like he's chasing after it until he fully understands it. He also was a great storyteller, and I think that stories activate both cognition and emotion and move people as a result. And Lincoln truly used language to paint pictures and move people to action. But what you reminded me of as you talked about Fox News and MSNBC is that Lincoln really valued, as we know, diverse opinions. And he didn't see adversity as a negative, but he sought to understand perhaps a blind spot or a point that he didn't understand.
Right.
And he literally built his cabinet around folks who perhaps thought they could do a better job than he, some of them. And the cabinet was really chosen because of their unique expertise. So, Harvey, let me throw it to you for additional insights about
his use of language and perspective. I just wanted to pick up on something that Larry said about the iconic nature of the speech. It is interesting, of course. I mean, historically, as we look at it as historians, you know, there's always a difference between context being there in 1863 and what we know today. And, you know, great historians also always emphasize that we should try to put ourselves in the time itself without seeing everything that we see today, which is sometimes very difficult to do. But I think even on that point, one of the great iconic parts of the speech is that today, when we look at a definition of democracy, you know, what is democracy? And whether someone was pro or anti Lincoln, the phrase towards the end when he says government of the people, by the people, for the people, that is what is considered to be a very precise and sound definition of democracy, government of, by, and for the people. And the other thing that's kind of interesting there is Lincoln was very worried in the speech that democracy might fail. And, you know, when he used words like proposition and testing whether this nation or any other nation, he's not sure. And, you know, America was a teetering democracy in the 1860s because of the Civil War. And the monarchs of Europe wanted Lincoln to fail. So when he says government of, by, and for the people shall not perish from the earth, he uses the word earth there and not nation. And the reason why he says that is because he knew the American example was going to be powerful one way or the other throughout the world. And that's why the speech is powerful throughout the world. You know, nations in Europe, nations in Africa, nations in Asia, they all study the Gettysburg Address because it's a compact definition of democracy. So when you use the word iconic before, Larry, that's really critical. And it's very critical for our own school system. Because when we talk about what's the purpose of public schools, you know, public schools are there to carry out the idea that all are created equal and that all should have an equal chance. So Pam and I have always felt that there's a direct connection between the Gettysburg Address and the mission of schools.
It's so interesting, and you don't think about that, and I'm glad you guys did. I have to ask you something. I want to get down to the nitty-gritty of social studies education these days, guys. You know, when we say the words, the Gettysburg Address, and a teacher might assign it, but there's, as we've been talking about the last half hour, there's more to it than that, all right? And in today's world, Gesundheit, by the way, and in today's world...
Thank you.
All right? No, you're welcome. I believe I've been going through that on this end the whole time. I could shut off my mic. It's that simple. Okay. But
you see, I am catching your
out. You are catching it. You are catching it.
Oh, boy.
All right. Yeah. And, you know, but the Gettysburg Address, it needs to be taught. It needs to be taught the way you're talking about it, both of you. And how do you feel about that in today's social studies curriculum? We're always talking about, you know, making people better citizens and understanding the country and understand what it's like in a world of social media, if I may. We can talk about that for a few seconds here. But there's a response. there's a responsibility that comes with democracy, and we seem to somehow maybe be losing that democracy. By the way, today's election day. I'm going to go vote after this show, just so everybody remembers that. Yeah, forgot about that. Yep.
Pam, why don't you pick it up?
One of the things that Harvey and I were talking about yesterday is what a cool activity it would be for a teacher to ask half of the class to imagine that they were in the crowd in 1863 and really put themselves into that context. And then half of the class to look back on the Gettysburg Address in 2017 with the
great
perspective of what they know about history, and then compare and contrast their perspectives and perceptions as a way to really study not only the historical context but use of language as well. We actually said it's kind of an interdisciplinary social studies language
arts.
That's
a great point. That's a great point.
Effort. So,
that is, I hope people just heard that. Break down the silos. I wasn't even doing that, and I like to do that, but I wasn't even thinking about that as English, et cetera, et cetera. That it's so incredible. I have a question, Harvey. You seem to have really studied this. Were the people who were in the audience, were they locals, or were they people who came from Philadelphia, you know, an hour and a half? Well, those days, 3 days from Gettysburg, but today an hour and a half. Okay, yeah.
It was it was both. I mean, like, for example, the governor of Pennsylvania was there. Stuart was there with Lincoln. Obviously, Edward Everett was the greatest orator of the day. And in the 1860s, that was a sporting event. You know, people would listen to orators, and that's why,
yeah,
you know, when
like
people talk
AFL
about,
games.
For example,
like
when we talk about the Lincoln-Douglas debates again, you know, sometimes 10 or 15,000 people would go to those debates because that was entertainment. So, yes, there were local people there, but there were also people from all over the North who were there to support the moment. And, again, the president was there, you know. And I just want to add one other thing to Pam's example there, you know, regarding the social media business. Again, you know, a key – we make the connection with today. We look at the Gettysburg Address as a primary source. This is not fake news. This is real news. This is an opportunity for kids to learn about the importance of higher level thinking and critical thinking by analyzing facts and to learn to be critical consumers. So that's one of the reasons why we think it's a great example to look at the difference between fake news and real news. This is the real deal. This is what Lincoln actually said. And when we talk about the unfinished work, well, we could look at the Gettysburg Address and say, what is the unfinished work? The unfinished work is, you know, are we going to become a people, a government of, by, and for the people? So
we're still working
on
that.
We talk about social media. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's a very important point, is that we're an evolving democracy.
And, you know, it's interesting. And, you know, of course, our southern states at that time, you know, were trying to secede, et cetera. And, it's interesting. If you look at the address, you always see it, you know, from one point of view. I always do. You know, it's like I said, it's iconic. It'd be fun to have a class look at it from the other point of view. If you heard this and you are a Southerner fighting for, you know, secession and your cause, what would your reaction be to that? Did the word still hold? I have a feeling. Okay, that a guy like Robert E. Lee, when he read that speech, thought that speech was terrific. I have that feeling, even though he was defeated at the Gettysburg. He was that kind of a man.
Yeah, let me just comment on that just for a brief moment. I think why that's important, Larry, and it gets into one of the interesting parts of the speech. He never uses the word slavery in the speech, even though we know what a new birth of freedom means.
Yeah.
And very similar to the second inaugural, when he talks about with malice towards none, Lincoln looked at himself as a unifier. He never accepted the South as seceding from the Union. He always, you know, talked about when he talked about the Union, and here he never even uses the word Union. He just uses the word nation. So he's always trying to unify the country. And so that's a very important point, is that his goal was, we're a united country.
Well, I think we could all learn something from that these days. Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We won't get into it too
amen.
Much. Yes. Exactly. Exactly. You were both wonderful. This was really enlightening. I enjoyed it. I love history. I taught history. But I'm not an expert on the Civil War or the Gettysburg Address. And I got to tell you, I found the show incredibly interesting. I hope the audience did, too. The authors, okay, Learning from Lincoln. All right, let me get this right here. Leadership Practices for School Success from ASCD. Be concise and be humble. I think that's what I learned today. I don't know if I have those qualities, Pam. I don't know.
I think you do a good job.
Oh, you're a sweetie. Okay. Thank you, guys. And you guys are welcome here anytime. You know that. This was a wonderful idea for a show. I just loved it. Thank you, Harvey, Alvy. Thank you, Pam Robbins.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Larry. Really enjoyed it.
Oh,
it was a real honor.
It's an honor to have you here. Believe me, I love having you guys on the show. Come back anytime. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Harvey and Pam, the Harvey and Pam show. What a great show. I love that. Really an interesting take. Devin over at ASCD, you really helped me put this show together. Devin Boyle, thank you so much for doing that. We're going to archive the show. Please share it, all right, with your principal and with your superintendent and the other speech makers that you have, all right, and pop it into those unsiloed classes. Will archive at education-talkradio.org and tweet it out over at EduTalkRadio. And speaking of democracy, it's voting day. I forgot all about that. I knew I was going to go to vote. I forgot to mention it. Make sure you vote. And if you didn't vote, have a guilt trip. Okay? Make sure you vote. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening.